All right, so we are here on the first episode of the Bulls Charge podcast, kind of ahead of schedule from where we were going to be, just because this has been a huge day for the Chicago Bulls. The Gar Pax era is kind of over. Pax is still around. Gar is gone, and there's only one guy I can think of to help me make sense of this entire day, and that is one-third of the Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and co-host of Ow! Not terrible, Avery Johnson, or what, Dave? the Ball Sports Podcast, Big Dave Watson. Dave, how you doing, man?
I'm good, brother Brandon. How you feeling, man?
I'm feeling pretty good. The Gar Pax era is over.
It's over. It's done. It's officially done.
Started up the van. They're on the way to the airport.
The van is ready. I mean, it has picked up Gar. You know, it is. We're going to a undisclosed location. It's no windows on the van. I don't know if there were any seats inside except for two, the passenger and the driver. But yeah, he's in. He's been secured, and he's out of here. That's all I know is he's gone.
Absolutely. So the Bulls officially announced this morning Arturis Karnatsovas, I'm assuming is how you say his name. Mm-hmm. As the new executive vice president of basketball operations. Following that, they didn't fire Gar Foreman when there was a lot of speculation that he might be reassigned to scouting, but they completely got rid of him. Mm-hmm. And then John Paxson is being left on as a senior advisor, if you haven't seen all the news. So, Dave, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts just on the Gar – let's just start with your thoughts on the Gar Pax era overall. How did you feel they did over the past few years?
Wow, that's a huge question. Well, I would say the Gar Pax era wasn't great by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, obviously everybody's in this to win, and everybody's in this to get to that ultimate goal, which is getting that championship. And you want to do things to ensure that you're getting towards that championship. And it seemed like during the Gar Pax era, they did a lot of things to ensure they would just be a first or second round playoff team. A lot of things they did. Now, I'm not one of those Gar Pax bashers. I'm not. I have a lot of love, especially for Paxson. I have a lot of love for that guy. Not just because of what he did on the court, but you can't have that kind of hate in your heart for a guy who brought in so many people that you love. Like, there's no Tom Thibodeau. There's no Joakim Noah. There's no Nazi Muhammad. There's no Nate Robinson. There's no Luol Deng. There's no Taj Gibson. Like, these are all guys that are revered, loved, supported, respected throughout the city. And people cry when they sit and watch some of those games, Game 7 in New Jersey or Game 1 against the Heat and things like that, or even that whole Boston Celtics series. Yeah. That was all Paxson stuff. Paxson put all that stuff together to put those teams. He assembled that team. He assembled that coaching staff and got them in that position to where we were competing for a championship. So I have some level of respect for John Paxson and what he did for that organization and the people that he brought in. It's the one place I've always trusted the front office is when they scout and when they draft. I have trust for them there. Gar Foreman's different because Gar Foreman, when I think of him, the first person that comes to my mind is Cameron Payne. That's the first person I think of. And I can't – for me, that stuff was inexcusable. That was the start of the ending, was the constant cramming down our throats of Cameron Payne when we saw that this dude could not play basketball. What you gave up to get Cameron Payne, the things you gave up, I just mentioned Taj Gibson, you basically gave him up, and a draft pick to get you Cameron Payne and like King Joffrey. So those moves like that were upsetting. A lot of people didn't like the three alphas. I wasn't one of them. It didn't bother me that they did three alphas. I felt like they just wanted to be a name again for a year and see if they can get some free agents to come in here based off of getting Dwayne Wade. So trust me, I'm not mad that people hated that era, but I'm not one of those that hated that era. I'm not. The constant ridiculousness that was going on, behind the scenes, the acting like they were James Bond and, just the secrecy that was going on and not the openness to fans, because Bulls fans are very intelligent. Say what you want. They're very intelligent. They know the game. They know what's going on. and they can look and they see and they know what's happening. So they know when they're being lied to. And it seemed like there was a lot of that going on. And it was a lot of insulting of intelligence going on with that GuardPax era. So, yeah, man, it was a lot of things. And the oversensitivity, Brandon, like they were so sensitive to a lot of stupid things that didn't matter to anybody else but them. You know, like I'm more concerned about what's going on the court. They're more concerned about how it looks. They're more concerned about with the optics. And we're like, well, the optics should be, how about you put better team on the court? Like, that's the optics we're concerned about. It should be looking at. So, overall, I don't think it was great for GuardPax. They had a couple moments. Paxton had much more moments and bigger moments and more well-respected moments for me than Gar Foreman had. But Gar Foreman will get a job again because he does have some semblance of respect as a scout throughout the league. But as a GM, he does not. And I am happy he's gone. I am ecstatic that he is gone. I'm glad that this whole era is over and I get to put it in the rearview mirror.
Absolutely. I think I'm right there with you. I have more respect for Paxton because I think a lot of people, especially younger fans, they don't remember how irrelevant the Bulls were in the early 2000s. And that right after the Jordan era and then the early 2000s, the late 90s, early 2000s, they were just pathetic. I mean, they brought out Benny the Bull. You guys have talked about this on your pod. They brought out Benny the Bull to try to recruit T-Mac. Uh-huh. They made several just awful draft decisions with Marcus Fizer, Dalibor Bagarek, back in, like, I think 2000, 2001, somewhere in there. They were just not – they had no sense of direction. And Paxton comes in. The next few years, they got Heinrich, Ben Gordon, one of our favorites. Mm-hmm. Eventually, Lou Alding, Joakim Noah. But then, of course, the prize in 2008, Derrick Rose. And so Paxton, I never had as much I didn't have as much venom against. Gar just seemed like a used car salesman. Like, he was just trying to he was just trying to put one over on you the entire time, and he wasn't always telling you the truth, and he seemed like he was just out for his own interest. Hmm. And it kind of echoed this quote, if I could find it, it cracked me up from Cody Westerlund from the virtual presser they did today. This is Arturis. He said, it was apparent we have different philosophies in this discussion with Gar Foreman, and he fired him because that would prevent the Bulls from moving forward.
Mm.
And, I see that. Gar just seemed like he was out for his own interests and out for his own things. There was no way he was going to fit with this new regime. Mm. But he also did talk highly about John Paxson and said he had a great reputation around the league, and it sounds like Gar did not. And it's kind of echoing what your thoughts were and my thoughts are, so.
Yeah, that's just how I feel about it. Like, it's not for me. It wasn't Paxson, you know. Like you said, he has a good reputation around the league. Some people like him. They have some respect for him. I mean, they wouldn't have been able to make some of the trades they did if you didn't have some kind of respect for John Paxson. But Gar Foreman, people just were like, "Who?" Like, you didn't know who he was. You never heard what he was. You just knew that he was here, and then he was put in a position of power. And then it didn't work out. So it was just a lot of that.
So with the news today, sadly, Jim Boylan was not included. So do you think that Jim Boylan will be the coach of the Bulls next year? What's your take?
Oh, man. Yeah, you almost made the preacher cuss, man. I was like, man, look. No, there's no way Jim Boylan will be the coach of this team next year. There's no way. You can't sit and watch and look at what he's done on the basketball court and think that he's going to have any semblance of being around this team next year. You've heard quotes from the players who basically have said he can't coach. These are basically the quotes that they're saying. We like him. He's a great guy. He cares about us. He can't coach. Those are the quotes. That's what I'm hearing from these players when I'm reading these statements about them. How many clips can you look at of players on the sideline dumbfounded by some of the decisions that he was making? How many clips can you look at of coaches on the opposing team who are dumbfounded by the decisions that he made? Let's not forget, the coaches are a fraternity. They have each other's back. And I watched Jim Boylan alienate at least three coaches. I watched Doc Rivers get mad at him. Doc Rivers.
Oh, yeah.
come on, get upset at him. I don't remember the name of Phoenix's coach who they had before Monty Williams, but he walked clear off the court and didn't even shake his hand after a game because of him calling timeouts with like them down 20. How many times did we watch this dude call timeouts in the Bulls like down 20 with like a minute left, with like 15 seconds left? It's a waste of time, Brandon. It is a waste of time and a waste of effort to continue to have this man here on our Chicago Bulls. And I'm just waiting patiently. That's all I'm going to do is wait patiently and let my man AK cook and see what he's going to cook up some more. But no, I don't expect Boylan to be here at all.
I don't either. I think the reality of it is with the league shut down right now, there's 65 games in the season. If you were to fire him now, it could impact a lot of the offseason. So until there's a clear direction of where the league is going to go the rest of the season, I don't think they're going to fire him. But I think it's coming. I think it's absolutely coming. And it goes back to a lot of stuff you just said. The perception around the league is he's a joke. And his comments about Field of Dreams and making quotes on them and the leadership committees and all the stuff that he's done over the past couple seasons. If you're trying to build a winner here, and it sounds like Arturis is going to try to build a winner here, you can't have him on the sidelines. And I'm glad. I really am. I feel bad for Jim Boylan, the guy. He seems like a good guy.
Great guy.
Some people just aren't good coaches. It happens.
It happens, Brent. I mean, it happens that way sometimes. And I mean, you hit it on the head. Like, he is a really good guy. In the times and the interactions that we've had with him, he's engaging, he's funny, he's personable. You can see all those things. He is definitely a person you want to hang out with, have some drinks with, and watch a game at the bar with. I don't want to watch a game with him coaching it. That's the problem. He's a great person, but he's just not a good basketball coach. And just looking at the basketball decisions I would see him make would drive me insane. Sitting there watching those game after game when we would be doing Bulls Outsiders, I'm watching every single game. And just the X's and O's of it were perplexing. Like, I couldn't understand the moves and the decisions that he was making. And then I'm looking at the players, and they don't understand it either. And then I'm listening to the announcers, and they don't understand it either. So I'm like, okay, so it's not just me looking at it and, just being all basketball nerdy about it. No, the landscape of the NBA does not understand what's going on when you make these decisions. So, yeah, he's just not a good head basketball coach. I think he's the worst Bulls coach I've seen. I've seen a lot, but I think he's worse than Tim Floyd. Like, because it's one thing to be bad, Brandon, but it's another thing to be bad and stubborn.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember Tim Floyd as well. Being in Kentucky, I didn't get to see Tim Floyd as well.
Oh, you missed nothing. Don't worry. You didn't miss it.
And back then, I could only watch on national TV, and Tim Floyd wasn't on national TV a lot.
That's true. Very true.
The earliest Bulls game after the title years I remember was Shaq throwing a punch at Brad Miller and missing him.
Oh, yes.
And I think that was after Tim Floyd, I think. So.
Yeah. It was. I remember that. That was a classic right there. We thought you could feel the wind through your screen when that Shaq punch came, man. That was a heck of a swing.
Oh, yeah. Completely whiffed, too. That just blew my mind. I was like, I don't know if he was trying to hit him or trying to miss him. Injured. Just kind of sent a warning shot. But,
yeah. That was something.
But no, I'm with you on your boy. And some guys, he's been around the league 20-something years. Mm. A lot of championship experience with the Spurs, with the Rockets. But Hakeem Olajuwon been around a lot of greatness, but sometimes it just doesn't translate to being a leader. And I don't think the Bulls have a leader right now, not an effective one. Mm-hmm. And I think with this particular group, Zach wants to be a star. He wants to be the guy.
Yeah.
Whether he should be the guy, I don't know. I mean, that's I guess debatable. To me, it's not as debatable on this team as it was, 12 months ago. But because Lowry Markkanen has really just turned into a statue standing outside the three-point line, which if that's on him or on Boylan, whatever. But they have to have someone who can kind of put these pieces together. And I think that's going to be the most important piece of the offseason at this point, is finding the person who can put these young pieces together and develop these guys into something more than just five individuals on the court that really don't play well for one another.
That's true. And that's what we're looking for, is some competency. For me, that was lacking severely this year. Just the incompetent play, whether it was the players on the court, because I'm not going to put it all on Jim Boylan.
No.
The players have to get out there, you know, and execute and have to play. And a lot of them were not good at it. Tomas Satoransky, like you said, Lauri Markkanen. You know, I'm a huge Lauri Markkanen fan. Oh, but he was just, I mean, non-existent this year. And I've never seen that kind of regression in a player that fast. So yeah, and I'm not, trust me, it's not all on Boylan. I'm not going to put all that on Boylan, but some of that is on Boylan and some of that is definitely on Lauri. He has to say, no, I'm not going for that. I got to make this move. And he has to make better plays out there on the basketball court, period. But yeah, I want to see some semblance of competency. There has to be structure on this team. I didn't feel there was any kind of structure going on. Guys are just going through the motions out there. And a guy like Zach LaVine, because I know we kind of disagree on Zach LaVine, but as far as him being, you know, like that kind of star leader kind of caliber player and things like that. But, you know, I mean, he's a 25-point-per-game scorer. He's a great player in this league and stuff like that. Now, will he be the leader for this team going forward? I have no idea. Just depends on the coach that they're bringing in and what kind of direction they want to go in. And if Zach is willing to go in that direction, I think all those things will determine if he'll be here or not. Because let's be real, nobody's untradeable on this team, not one person, including Zach LaVine, even though he's, you know, your best player right now. Nobody's untradeable. And I was thinking about that one day where I was like, man, is anybody untradeable on this team? And I was like, and it's 25 points per game untradeable. I was like, well, if Reggie Theus was tradable, he's tradable. You know, like got everybody's tradable on this team. So he's definitely tradable and stuff like that. But I really do like Zach LaVine, but if not going to fit the philosophy, because right now we're following the leadership of AK. It's what he's saying. It's what he says goes right now. It's not – I don't have a – oh, man, I have to follow what this player is saying because, you know, I trust what he's doing more than I do what this front office is doing. No, it's all brand new regime right now. So it's whatever AK wants to set up and what he wants to put forth and what he wants to do. And I don't know if it's going to work, and I don't know if it will succeed or what will happen. But I'm rolling with him. He's the one I'm rolling with. So he's the one that's going to have to make those tough decisions about who stays and who goes. And honestly, for me, there's only like two players I'm like, I just really want to see stay here at least one more year. And that's Lauri Markkanen and Kobe White. Those two guys I really, really want to still see be here. And because I want Lauri to give me one more year. I can't give up on what I saw, Brandon. Like, I know what I saw. My eyes didn't lie to me. And to see the regression that he had just makes me think, okay, you know what? I'm going to give you one more year. If you don't do it for that one more year, then I'm completely over it. I'm completely done with it, and we can move on from there. But I just want to see that one more year from Lauri. I want to see Kobe White. He's exciting. And anyone else who wants to come along, I'm with it. And anyone who doesn't make it, man, thank you for your time, and we're going to keep moving.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the two questions for me coming to the offseason well, first is, can Arturas fix some of the redundancy that's on this roster? I think there's a lot of players that are redundant. I think Kobe and Zach LaVine are just really redundant on the same team. I think Lowry and Wendell, in a lot of ways, are kind of redundant on the same team. And I think, actually, one of our favorite guys, Daniel Gafford, I think he actually fits better alongside Lowry in a vacuum than Wendell might, just because of his athleticism, his need not to touch the ball every possession and be fed. I think Wendell needs to have some touches, and I just don't think they have the offensive system in place to do that yet. Okay. And then the second question I have is, you know, how does the rest of the league see Zach LaVine? Because I know a lot of Bulls fans think he's a superstar, but when you listen to some general media, it's kind of a mixed bag. Some people think he's just empty calories. He's an empty 25 points a game, and he's not impacting the game and that kind of stuff. So I wonder how Arturas is going to see him, and if he's going to see him as Paxson and guarded, you know, as a cornerstone, a franchise cornerstone, or if he's going to see him as an appealing trade asset that he can get something for. Yeah. because I mean, it sounds like he has carte blanche on whatever he wants to do at this point. He can, you know, trade whoever he wants to, hire, fire, and go about his business. I don't know what the best option is at this point, because you're right. Levine right now is the best player on the Bulls, but I got to see Lowry. I got to see another year or two of that thing. He's just too good to regress like he has. And I just see something. He's got a skill set that we need and that a lot of teams would love to have. And I think there's a lot of potential on tap there that I still see a potential franchise guy. Am I crazy? You don't think he's a potential franchise guy still?
You thinking Lowry is?
Yeah.
I think you're crazy. No, I don't find it. I don't think you're crazy at all. I still have those thoughts that he's a guy that you can build around. I never saw him as a sidekick, and I understand why people see him as such, as a number two, and that's as far as he can go because he's not demanding, and he doesn't, you know, have that man give me the ball mentality, which is fine. But that's for me always something you can learn as your years go on, and I always point back to Dirk when I think of those things, because Dirk was not that at all until like 2011, you know, like or even 2000 earlier. I think it was 2007 when they played the Suns and he dropped 50 on them in game five. And though that's when it came out for him, but it took him years to get to that point to realize he was the best player on the court and to realize I'm better than everyone. It takes some guys a day. It takes some guys a year. It takes some guys 8 years to figure these things out. I'm just here to give, obviously Lori is going to take him time to figure it out. Now, my thing with Lori has always been is I've seen that he knows that mentality. And he just – because I saw him do it over when he was playing with his team in Finland.
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking about the way he played. And I'm not talking about the scoring and, you know, all that. I'm talking about the mental of it. I'm talking about him demanding the basketball, him talking crap to people when he's hitting turnarounds in their faces, him, you know, yelling at his team like, yeah, let's get it. Let's get it going on. And – the constant movement of the ball. Those are the things that I'm like, oh, he has that in him because that's already there. It's in him. And for some reason, when he got here, it didn't travel with him in the carry-on when he flew over. And he's like, he left it back home. And you would see it sparingly sometimes. You see it maybe one game or something like that, or a game his son has been flown over and he gets to spend time with him. Then you'll see it pop out of him. I saw it happen to him once in a game with his father, and I believe it was the Denver game they played. Hmm. And his father had came to see him, and that next game he was going crazy. Like, he was just balling out. And it's just great to see. Like, those things matter to those young guys. I know you remember the Dean Smith game when he came to see Kobe White.
Yeah.
Kobe White had an incredible game that first game. He was like, man, can you come to more games, please? Like, he some guys need that stuff. You know what I'm saying? Need to see those people, their loved ones, especially a person who's not from here. I think it helps him a lot with those things. But, and that's why I think having AK here is going to help Lori, because now you have a guy in charge who understands international basketball. Yes. And a guy who played for Lithuania and who is respected all over pretty much in all circles of basketball like AK is. Mm-hmm. So I think he understands Lori more so than anybody that's on the organization outside of maybe Tomas Satoransky, who can understand what that mentality is and what it is like growing up, you know what I'm saying, and playing for international teams and stuff like that. So I'm excited for Lori. So because to have a guy like that in place for him, I still think he can be that franchise guy, Brand. I don't think it's crazy to think that. I just think you have eyes and you saw what it could be. And we know that this season was an anomaly because every single person, probably except Zach LaVine, regressed on this team. Oh, so, yeah, I still have no problem with you believing that he could be a franchise guy because I still have those hopes and aspirations.
My evidence is game one, 35-17 in Charlotte.
Oh, ball.
I was blown away, and I had just written a piece about Zach LaVine making the All-Star leap, and I immediately regret. I was like, "Well, no, it's going to be Lowry. he's going to make the leap." And then the next few games, of course, you know, it went downhill from there for the most part. I don't understand. I don't know if there was a minutes restriction, but for a while, it just seemed like he was just playing 29, 30 minutes a game. And maybe I was just to fit him in with Thad Young, but for a guy like that, he just needs, and I think Casey Johnson kept tweeting it. He's got to play more. He's got to play. He's 22 years old. You got to play the guy. And I think it just, I think his rhythm was just thrown all around, and they just had him standing at the 3-point line. That was part of the scheme, just having him kind of on the wing or slightly toward the top of the key at the 3-point line all the time. And, and toward when he got hurt, you saw him start to attack the rim more and start to play a little bit more natural than what he was. And I still have hope that that's going to be the norm with the new coaching staff, and they're going to figure this thing out. But who knows? We'll have to wait and see, I guess.
Yeah, definitely a wait and see approach coming up. But it's an exciting wait and see, because I just love what I'm watching right now. Like, so I got to keep telling people there's no more, there's a new chef running the kitchen. I'm going to let him cook, because right now, everything I smell right now smells delicious. So I'm just going to let him cook, and he can serve it however he wants. I'm just going to sit here, and when he's ready to serve the food, I'll be ready to eat.
I'm ready. I'm ready. I'm really ready to see for next season. I don't even care if the season resumes at this point.
Right. Yeah. This season is clearly over.
Just to see, and who knows, we're probably going to have a decent lottery pick again. Who knows what will become of that. This is kind of a weak draft, it sounds like.
And that's a good thing also about AK is I like the team that he drafted in Denver and the teams that he put together. I mean, first of all, everybody talks about the fleece job that he did for the Bulls when he, you know, gave us Doug McDermott, and we got they got Gary Harris and Nurkic got the two picks that turned out to be those guys. But my thing was when he drafted Jokic. I mean, Jokic is a second round pick. He was the 41st pick in the second round. And I mean, who was looking at that? Like, everybody, you can praise Jimmy Butler, and that was an incredible pick, Jimmy Butler. That was an incredible pick, okay? But Jokic is a dude who you are considering for MVP. This is like a dude who's top five MVP, and they found him in the second round. That's unheard of. That's unheard of stuff right there. So drafting him, getting Jamal Murray, and Jamal Murray looking like an all-star guard this early in his career, I did not expect to see that from him. And the coach that he brought in, Mike Malone, has been great for them. I mean, just the whole entire team they put together and the way they play and the way they are coached. And they are second in the West, for goodness sakes. This is the Western Conference, and they are a top three team. That can't be, you know, sugarcoat, man. You can't just gloss over stuff like that. That's amazing that he did. And now I get to see him bring that over here to our organization and do that here. And he talked about his love for the Bulls. You know, he said a line, Brandon, that stuck out for me. What he said overseas, he said Chicago Bulls was American basketball. And I was like, whoa, okay? Like, whoa, that is a huge statement. That, for me, that is colossal, man. He said that's American basketball. Like, when you wanted to know what American basketball was, you looked at the Chicago Bulls. Incredible. So he's already got a mentality. He knows what it is to be a Chicago Bulls winner, because he's seen it, because he was a follower and he was a fan of it. So he put it on that pedestal. So he already knows what we used to. You know what I'm saying? So the fact that he wants to be here and try to get us back to that kind of level, man, I'm over the moon excited, Brandon. It smells delicious, Brandon. Smells delicious, man.
It's an exciting time to be a Bulls fan right now. I'm telling you. I really like the Michael Porter Jr. pick too, because
I forgot about that.
Yes. I was tweeting somebody the other day. I think it was our guy, C. Red Fred. Shout out to C. Red Fred.
Shout out.
We were tweeting back and forth, and like that – Garvin Pax would have never taken a chance on Porter Jr. with his history. It all happened from the Derrick Rose stuff, and I get that. It just kind of hovered over them. But the mentality that Arturas had, just the high risk, high reward kind of mentality, just really spoke to me. Because if Porter Jr. becomes anything like he was coming out of high school, that takes the Nuggets to another level.
Yes.
Having him on your roster and taking that chance, why not? I mean, it was the 13th or 14th pick of that draft.
14th, yeah.
I love that mentality, and I just don't think that the previous regime had that kind of mentality for guys like that. And I think he's going to bring that to the table. I'm really excited for, you know, how, like you said, how he's going to draft and how the gems he's going to be able to find and how he's done that in Denver already. And to see that happen here in Chicago and see some, see that this brand of basketball, the one thing that's bothered me the past, I guess since, probably since Derrick Rose left, just watching games on TV, and I haven't been to the United Center in several years, mm-hmm. but just how dead the crowd is. It's just not excited at all. Mm-hmm. In any game, I can't remember the last game I watched. I was like, man, the crowd's just really into this. Mm-hmm. And you watch some of these games, NBA, their YouTube account is showing a lot of the old games. They show Bulls games and that kind of stuff mm-hmm. from the Jordan era and the Rose era. But you see how loud the crowd is. And it makes you miss that. It makes you miss the excitement of Chicago Bulls basketball. And I hope that excitement comes back
to
the regime.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And there was nothing to really be excited about. I do remember the last game I saw that the crowd was like amped for when the Bulls Outsiders was there and we saw them play OKC mm-hmm. and Kobe White had an incredible game that game. And the crowd was going crazy, like, because it was a comeback. And the Bulls came all the way back. I don't remember if they won or lost. Honestly, I don't. But it was they made it close. I want to say they won. Yeah, I want to say they won that game because I remember Felicio trying to lose that game for them, and it just didn't happen that way. So, yeah, the Bulls. It was exciting, you know, being there. And I'm just looking around, like, yeah. And it still wasn't at that level of peak ridiculous fandom. It was just people just happy that competency was happening on the court because Kobe White was having an incredible game. Oh, yeah. So it wasn't just everybody just zoned in, you know what I'm saying, on the game like you're talking about. Like, you know that feeling because you could feel it through the television, that stuff you're talking about. Like, you could just feel it radiating. And when a team, you know, when we just rawr, we wanted and we were hungry, we were savage, and everybody was on the same page, and everybody just had this joy, and the United Center was packed and it was just rocking. Like, yeah, it wasn't none of that. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't that. It was more excitement because we made a comeback. It wasn't just a constant hum throughout the game. Right. You know, like it used to be. But man, it's gonna be back there soon, baby. We made the right moves to ensure that we can get back to that level soon, and I'm just excited.
I think the Bulls are actually a competent franchise again. It's crazy.
Yes.
But I think management was kind of embarrassed. I think they got embarrassed over All-Star Weekend with the fire Garpax signs on TV and like all the hashtags trending throughout social media, all that kind of stuff. I think it really showed them that they couldn't just sit on their hands anymore. Yeah, they had to make a change, and I'm really a fan of what they've been doing so far, and I think it's going to continue on. I think we have a smart guy at the helm, and it's been a long time coming. I'm 17 years of the John Paxson era, and I guess about what, 10 is – I can't believe it's been 10 years for Gar Foreman as the GM. Goodness. Can you believe it? I mean, it's been 10 years since the Bulls were in the Eastern Conference Finals. That was a year. That's such a long time. But, yeah, exciting times ahead, Dave.
Exciting times, Brandon, man. We on our way, man. I'm excited. I'm excited. I can't wait. I can't wait. I can't wait.
Well, Dave, I appreciate you joining me on here. It's always good to talk to you. Always good to hear your voice. Anything you want to say about Black Panther before we
Oh, yeah. Well, a couple of things I want to say. Brent, you, first of all, you know you're one of my favorite people, period. You've been one of my favorite people for years, sir. So, and that'll never change, man. So I'll definitely roll with you. You're my guy. And I got you whenever you need me. I will definitely be there for you, my friend. And yes, your taste in movies are horrible. It's one of the things I do love about you. And Black Panther, I'll never ever let you live that down, but I'm okay with it. You know, I'm accepting of it. But these other ones, man, I got to get you on, man. You got to watch Terminator 2, man. You got to watch
that. That is going to be on my list. I did start watching Dr. No again the other night.
Okay, okay.
Still wasn't feeling it. I didn't get – I was probably about, you know, maybe a quarter of the way through. And then fell asleep, honestly. But I love some of the James Bond movies. And then, like, that one just never really resonated with me.
Yeah, yeah. And it's okay. Yeah, it's so for me, it was the one that just made him James Bond. Like, it just was like, oh, this is James Bond. this is what it's supposed to be, and this is how it's supposed to be. Like, anytime they show the scene of any James Bond saying Bond, James Bond, it's that clip from Dr. No, of him at the casino table with that cigarette hanging off half off his lip. That's the scene they're going to show every single time. So that's why Dr. No is so, you know, highly regarded, I feel, among people.
Like a smoothness about him in that movie, too.
Yeah, man. So smooth, man. Like,
every time he's on the screen, every time Connery's on the screen, he just has, like, command of it, it seems like. It's like he just really is embodying James Bond at that point and kind of trying to build the character up.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, and he built it. And he built it up, and he left, and he came back, and he still had that about him. And because I know you're not a Roger Moore fan, but I got to be a bigger Roger Moore fan as the older I got, because I realized what he was doing was kind of playing a caricature, a real caricature of James Bond, a guy with no flaws and no mistakes, and who would just do every single thing right. Like, Sean Connery still had it was super smooth, but still had kind of he might go through some trouble on this one. You know what I'm saying? Like, Sean Connery, I mean, Roger Moore, dude, not a hair was going to be out of place. Like, it was never going to be a problem. He was going to have the right joke, the right gadget, the right everything every single time. There was never going to be a loss at any point in time during the Roger Moore era. So these other James Bonds, that you've seen them go through it, and where they might have experienced some kind of loss, even Timothy Dalton's did, even Pierce Brosnan's, especially Daniel Craig's. But man, Roger Moore, I mean, taking no L's ever. He was not doing it at all. But Sean Connery, though, still number one.
Oh, yeah. No love for George Lazenby?
Why you got to do this to me, Brandon?
You like Honor Majesty Secret Service? Is that one of yours?
No.
You know, like it? I actually like it a little bit. I think it's a pretty good movie. It just seems disconnected from the franchise.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
But I feel the same way about Rocky V. I was talking with somebody about Rocky the other day. I feel the same way about Rocky V. Like, you just watch it by itself. It's not a bad movie. It just is the worst of a great franchise of movies. So
that is a fact.
It is a terrible franchise.
Yeah. It's still, like, even with all the new Rockies that came out, it's still, for me, the worst one. Yeah. It's even worse than Rocky Balboa. Because even Rocky Balboa tried to make sense, you know, out of that. Rocky V just was like, man, we're squeezing that sponge dry. We're going to get the rest of this check. You know, we're going to get the rest of this check. Like, the man has brain damage. Like, but now I'm going to still go ahead and get this street fight on with a heavyweight champion in the middle of the street. No, Rocky, no.
Creed 2? You a fan of Creed 2?
I am a fan of Creed 2. I really enjoyed both Creeds. I think they did both of them well. The first one was amazing.
First
one was really amazing. And I just wanted the second one to just kind of continue it on. And that's all it did. Like, I wasn't looking forward to Elevate. Honestly, I wasn't. I wasn't looking forward to like, oh, man, it's got to be up here now. It's got to be on that level. Because anytime you're bringing in Ivan Drago, son, you know, there's a sense of movie magic already coming up. You know what I'm saying? So I suspended all of that. I was just like, okay, well, let's just continue it on. And they continued it on. And they did a really good job of it, of continuing it on, in my opinion, and making that story continue to move along to the point where I'm like, yeah, I can't wait for Creed 3. If Creed 3 hits, I want to see where they go with that. So, yeah, I enjoy Creed 2. I thought they did a good job of keeping it dramatic and having a good job of the dynamic between Stallone and Young Creed.
Yes, absolutely. I thought it suffered from the same problem Rocky 2 does. And there's a lull in the middle of the movie that just kind of drags out. And it kind of slows the pace. When it picks up, I mean, it's just good. I mean, from the time he's training in the desert through the
end of
the
movie, yeah.
Oh, those scenes are just amazing.
Yeah, and it's not easy to. Yeah, it's not easy to do a sequel of old characters and their sons. You know what I'm saying? That's not easy to do and make it believable. You know, that's not simple to do. So the way they pulled that off, I was completely impressed.
Oh yeah. I'm a fan. I'm a fan of the Creed franchise as well. I can't wait for Creed 3 whenever it decides to come out.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I'm excited. Well, Dave, again, I appreciate you coming on, talking Bulls, talking movies. We could talk movies for like all day in wrestling. So
it's true.
And just, you know, not do that for the sake of time. But I appreciate you coming on, being the first guest on the Bulls Charge podcast. And love to you, brother. Keep safe. Keep healthy.
Thank you, my man. I love you too, bro. Thanks for having me on.
See you.